Horns of Chaos by Brian Craig, narrated by a Border Prince. Chapter 28. To begin with, when the wise dream unfolded like a sun-loving flower in the furnace of her inner being, Hycilia concentrated on making herself seem small. She knew, of course, that she was lending Regan Balbriff's not-very-wise dreamer the power he needed to blast his message across space to the Imperial fleet, but she did not want to run the risk that the psychers receiving the message might realise that its sender was not in control. She knew that they might be able to detect the influence of a native drug with which his master had dosed him, but she dared to hope that the fact might work to her advantage in helping to obscure the real peculiarity of Diageo's cry for help. So she had to make herself seem small. She had grown as large in her inner being as she had in the flesh since the touch of Satherol had infected her with greatness, but she still had the power to seem small, and the skill to use it. While Agio did manage to establish a telepathic link with the fleet psychers, therefore, Hycilia made a cunning effort to remain perfectly passive, allowing the awareness she shared to flow through her without response. This was not easy, for much of what she learned during her brief communion was startling, but she did it. And it was the human part of her, rather than the demonic part, that had provided the necessary practice. The human part of her had always known how to make herself seem small. Although she had been an apprentice wise dreamer, she had been a girl for far longer. In the game she had played as a child, the boys had always made the decisions and the rules. She had learned to accept those decisions and those rules and to work within them, invisibly, to her own ends. Subtlety had been second nature to her long before she had begun to dream in a particular way. Long before her initiation had begun into what Pater Sultana had called the wisdom of the dreamers. The demon part of her could never have attained such subtlety as that. Even though it was as intrinsically deceptive as well as intrinsically destructive, it was the human in her that was able to let Diageo claim and accept full credit for the contact he made with the Imperial fleet, and it was the human in her that marvelled at what she learned while she remained passive, burning no less hot for burning so very meekly. Hycilia had long known, as a matter of mere fact, that the Imperium had arrived on her world in spaceships, and that those ships had been part of a fleet maintained by a great star-spanning empire, but until she was party to Diageo's communication with other ships of that same fleet, she had not had the slightest idea of the implications behind the fact. She had always imagined the ships of the Imperium crossing space in much the same way that she had imagined wooden ships crossing the ocean that separated Gul Zakandra from Kalazandra, but now she realised that the analogy was a bad one. In much the same way that the flying machine that had brought Regan Balbriff and Diageo to her had simply hopped over the ocean through the empty air, which had no apparent means of supporting any machine, so the ships of the Imperial fleet were capable of hopping outside space itself into a timeless dimension where distance was immaterial. It seemed even less likely that such a dimension could support human-made machines than that the empty air could support the thing that had crashed. But it could, and it did. Ordinary humans, Hycilia realised, could not guide ships through the strange wilderness outside space. Only mutants touched by the wilderness could do that, and in order to do it, they needed a beacon lit and sustained by an army of people like herself. What she had always called wise dreamers, although the Imperium called them psychers. But the navigators who steered the starships of the Imperium and the psychers who maintained the Astronomicon always had to operate in opposition to the innate tendencies of the timeless dimension they called the Warp. The Warp was afflicted by dangerous storms, which sometimes disturbed the interface between the dimensions and spilled their energies into space, as did the one that caused the stars to swim in the sky. The Warp was also inhabited by its own native entities, minds quite like and yet quite unlike human minds, in their possession of intelligence, imagination, and purpose. Some such mind, she realised, was the god of Gul Zakandra, the god of Gavilon the Great, and the creator of Satherol. Satherol, she realised, was like the storm that stirred the stars, an eruption of the warp into space that framed her world and her life, immensely powerful, but inherently unstable, only capable of maintaining its fragile integrity and purpose for a very short time. Transmitting telepathic messages through the warp, Hysilia understood, was a difficult business, as difficult in its own way as steering ships through it. Briefly united with Diageo, she understood the near impossibility of what Reagan Balbreath had been trying to do. The astropaths of the real Imperium, she realised, had to undergo many years of rigorous training, far more rigorous, she supposed, than the training she would have undergone as a wise dreamer, and had then to bind their souls to the Emperor of Mankind, who had once been human but had now passed beyond mere mortality to a higher state of being. As a wise dreamer, she too would ultimately have bound herself in time to another power, either to a sorcerer like Gavlon, or, if she were especially privileged, directly to the god that Gavlon had served. But that process had been dramatically shortened by the arrival of Saffron. She understood, however, that there was a significant difference between her own soul binding and that of the Emperor's instruments. The Emperor of Mankind was unique because the Emperor of Mankind was a champion of order in a universe of chaos, the sole potent force, interrupting and delaying the inexorable process of universal decay. Although Reagan Balbreath had thought of himself as an authentic inquisitor and his associate priests as genuinely learned men, and moreover had fervently desired that his psychers might become true astropaths, 200 years of isolation by the warp storm had made it impossible to complete Diageo's training, let alone bind his soul to that of the Emperor. Diageo was a flawed instrument, who had needed the amplification of his powers by native drugs to allow him to catch the merest glimpses of Imperial ships in his dreams. He could never have made himself heard by the fleet's astropaths by that means alone, because the drug was too wayward, too fundamentally chaotic. But Diageo did not know that. Nor did Reagan Balbreath. Nor, it seemed, did the astropaths, who received his cry for help. The only way that Diageo had been able to get a message through to the Imperial fleet was to borrow the power of someone whose soul was very firmly bound, but not necessarily to the Emperor. Even now, Reagan Balbreath thought that he had found and provided that last advantage, but he was quite wrong. Even Gavlon the Great's part had been very minor. What was happening now was the culmination of a game whose first moves had been made centuries before. This was its final flourish, its key deception, and the deception, it seemed, had worked. The ships were coming. They were responding to Reagan Balbreath's plea. Or were they? Diageo's link was to the astropaths of the fleet, not to the captains of the individual ships, or the ultimate commander. Hysilia saw the situation as the Imperial psychers saw it, but they too were essentially passive, mere instruments of communication. Perhaps the ships were coming to lend material assistance to Calisandra's cause, to refresh the echo of the Imperium that persisted here in spite of all adversity, and to welcome it back into the greater Imperial fold. And perhaps not. Perhaps their commander could not tolerate the least risk of being cut off, as his luckless predecessors had been, and thought those predecessors such fools that their descendants could not be worth saving. Perhaps their priests and ministers had decided that whatever fragment of Imperial force and purpose remained on the world was already too degenerate to be worth the effort of redemption. Perhaps, in fact, the ships were coming to scour the planet clean of life of any kind. Saffron, Hysilia realised, would not care either way. The one thing that mattered to the demon was that the ship should come, because the demon's one overriding purpose was to be the destroyer of Imperial ships. The demon would not be here. Here, meaning not merely the world, but also the universe of space and time, for more than a mere moment. And he did not care at all what became of the world, or of the entire universe of space and time. It was interested in such matters, to be sure, even fascinated by them, but its interest was a mere aesthetic whim, whose ends would be as well served by annihilation as by preservation, and perhaps all the better served, given that Saffron itself had been made for annihilation and not for preservation. What fate, Hysilia wondered, had the god of Gul Sakandra planned for her world? Had the god even bothered to figure the world into any further calculations he, or it, might have made? She did not know. No matter how tightly her soul was bound, she did not know. And that was why, when Daphon shot Diageo in the head, abruptly cutting her line of communication to the Imperial fleet, Hycilia did not know whether to rejoice or mourn. She felt the heat of Dathan's anger, and also felt, in spite of its lesser intensity, the residual warmth of his love. But she did not know whether to be grateful for his furious arrival or not. She knew, when Dathan had completed his methodical vengeance, that when he came to help her, he was also acting as a true hero had to act on behalf of Ghul Zakandra, and on behalf of the world of which Ghul Zakandra was a tiny fragment. But she did not know whether he had wrought salvation or disaster. Had she been able to speak coherently, she would not have known what to say to him. Had she had time to tell him the story of what she had learned, she would not have known whether to tell it as epic, tragedy, or farce. She kept silent in the end because she did not want to scream, but she felt utterly and terribly alone with the burden of her knowledge and with the margin of ignorance that still remained. Bound as she was to Saffarel, the Destroyer, she could not help but share its purpose and its destiny, but there was enough of the human left in Hycilia to wonder what would happen after that purpose had been fulfilled. And that destiny conclusively met, and not merely to wonder, but to care.